Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Teach Yourself How to Learn, strategies you can use to ace any course at any level. By Sandra Yancey McGuire, with Stephanie McGuire. Forward by Mark McDaniel. Narrated by Carmen Jewel Jones. Publisher's note: this audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit Tantor.com and type Teach Yourself How to Learn into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page. Then, under the supplemental contents section, please enter the access code STUDY and then click the unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures and tables referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Additionally, this audiobook includes many references to exercises. Please have a piece of paper with a pen or pencil or a note-taking device available. Forward. In many ways, this is an exciting time to be a student. A plethora of engaging materials are available to stimulate students' thinking and to capture their interest. Elementary and middle school students can learn about radiocarbon dating by reading comic book narratives. To learn neuroscience, more advanced students can interact with Betty's Brain, a computer program in which a student teaches Betty about her brain and then poses questions to determine if Betty accurately understands the neuroscience concepts the student is trying to teach. Leela Wong and Biswas, 2008. College students can enroll in flipped classrooms in which cooperative learning occurs in small discussion groups within the context of a larger class. Moreover, teachers at every educational level are becoming familiar with and adjusting their instruction to align with the scientific principles of learning. Yet, being a student may also be more challenging than it has ever been. Curricula for sciences and social sciences continue to expand as more and more critical information is added to the knowledge base, a knowledge base that educators feel compelled to cover in their courses. In this environment, one often hears students complain that their courses are crammed with information that they are expected to memorize, learn, and master. The essence of the situation, then, is this. Teachers are working hard to design state-of-the-art courses based on the best available learning sciences evidence. But once the student leaves the classroom, he or she is largely responsible for figuring out how to learn all of the information presented in class. The current state of affairs is that teachers focus on teaching content, on what students need to learn, and not on teaching how students should go about learning. From my perspective, this state of affairs reflects a seriously flawed assumption, an assumption that is implicit in our educational system. The assumption is that students, humans, know how to learn. In fact, numerous published surveys of students' learning and study strategies from middle school to college clearly indicate that students typically embrace and practice ineffective learning and study techniques. Further, an abundance of evidence from the sciences of learning indicates that students' beliefs about which study conditions lead to the best learning outcomes are often in direct opposition to the actual learning outcomes. Without question, and this is the premise of Teach Yourself How to Learn, many students do not know how to learn. The upshot is that the current educational milieu is a grand paradox. Educators demand that students learn an incredible amount of material, but at the same time, most educators do not provide students with the skills, with the toolkit, to accomplish that enormous task. This is like throwing a child with no swimming skills in the deep end of the swimming pool and demanding that the child swim. We would never do this because we would expect that many children would not survive. But in education, often we do exactly this. We throw material at students, many with poor learning skills, and insist that they learn. Some students do figure out how to learn, but many do not.
Even a large percentage of post-secondary students endorse the following statement. Often, I feel I'm drowning in the sheer amount of material with which I have to cope. A fair number of students are drowning in their courses, and they are drowning in our educational system. It is in this context that Teach Yourself How to Learn can be a life changer. This book provides you with a toolkit for learning. It describes reliable and evidence-based techniques that you can easily adopt. You will learn about diagnosing any shortcomings in your own study techniques. To shore up those shortcomings, you will learn about effective ways to learn and build understanding. You will discover how to increase comprehension of reading assignments by taking steps to engage in active reading, to increase understanding by posing and answering deep-level questions, and to increase learning by studying as if you were going to teach the assigned material to the class. With this book, you will gain the insights and concrete techniques that are the foundations of effective learning and studying. No less important, this book is written without jargon and in a style that relates to your experiences. I believe you will find that this book will optimize your educational experiences and place you on the path to being an enthusiastic and effective lifelong learner. Mark McDaniel, co-director, Center for Integrative Research on Cognition, Learning, and Education, CIRCLE, Washington University in St. Louis, co-author of Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. Introduction. Come back, kids. Miriam, a freshman calculus student at Louisiana State University, LSU, made 37.5% on her first exam, but 83% and 93% on the next two exams. Robert, a first-year general chemistry student at LSU, made 42% on his first exam and followed that up with 3 100% in a row. Matt, a first-year general chemistry student at the University of Utah, scored 65% and 55% on his first two exams and 95% on his third exam. I could go on. I could tell you scores of stories like this from the last 15 years of my teaching career. Something happened to all of these students between their last failing grade and their first good grade. They learned something new. No miracles, just strategies. Recently, I was talking to a colleague who had heard about these remarkable transformations. She exclaimed, "You're a miracle worker. I want to be a miracle worker, too." I quickly told her that there was really nothing magical about the surges in students' test scores after I worked with them. Hundreds of faculty and learning center professionals are getting these same results on campuses around the country. But there are tens of thousands of faculty members, like my colleague, as well as hundreds of thousands of students who don't know what some students are doing to bring about their seemingly miraculous results. I wrote this book to let everyone in on one of the best-kept secrets in education. Any student can use simple, straightforward strategies to start making A's in his or her courses and enjoy a lifetime of deep, effective learning. From skeptic to convert. When I first encountered some of these learning strategies at LSU Center for Academic Success, CAS, I was skeptical. The strategies seemed too straightforward and simple to make a difference, and I didn't think students would use them. But after I began seeing students who had been making D's and F's turn into straight A students, I became convinced that these simple tools work miracles. If you find yourself feeling skeptical that these strategies will work, I implore you to use them for just 3 weeks. What have you got to lose? My promise to you. By the time you finish this book, you will understand why you may not know how to learn, have concrete, effective learning strategies to try, know how to change your mindset about intelligence and increase your motivation, and have everything you need to make A's in your courses. 1. My journey. I was once in your shoes. I get it. Let me say a little bit about why I have so much compassion for students. Confession time. Throughout my undergraduate career, I almost never studied until the night before an exam. I love to tell the following story, which illustrates my cluelessness in full technicolor. One day, during my senior year at Southern University in Baton Rouge, I was walking down the hall with one of my favorite chemistry professors, Jack Jefferson. Dr. Jefferson asked me a question about a basic chemical reaction, and I breezily replied that I had no idea how to answer his question, feeling absolutely no shame about my ignorance. At that time, I had no learning goals. Another story. After graduation, I headed to Cornell to pursue my graduate degree in chemistry, and I knew that when I arrived, I would have to take placement exams in general, organic, analytical, and physical chemistry. So I arrived in Ithaca a week early and set myself on a crash memorization course. I passed all my exams and was given a full load of graduate courses. I don't know why it didn't occur to me that if I passed the placement exams, the subsequent courses I took would require mastery of all the content I just tried to force-feed my brain. I continued my practice of cramming the night before an exam and began to make lower grades in my courses than I ever had in my life. I decided to visit one of my professors, Mel Goldstein, to discuss my grades. Dr. Goldstein gave weekly homework assignments, but made them optional. Of course, I never tried to do them until the night before the test, but at that point, I had nowhere near enough time to figure out the problems, so I would give up and go back to rote memorization. During our chat in his office, Dr. Goldstein told me that he was surprised my grades weren't worse, given that I never did the homework. Then he asked me why I never did it. The question caught me by surprise, so I lied and said that I did the homework but didn't turn it in because it was optional. I'm pretty sure he knew I wasn't telling the truth. It had never occurred to me that doing non-required homework would help me learn the material and improve my performance on tests. Instead of seeing the relationship between effort and performance, I began to think, if I can't make A's in these courses by doing what I've always done to make A's, chemistry must not be what I was meant to do. Although I was at Cornell on a full Danforth Foundation fellowship, I was still required to teach because Cornell views teaching as crucial to its graduate students' intellectual and professional development. That requirement turned out to be my saving grace. I was given one section of introductory chemistry as a teaching assistant, and I instantly fell in love with teaching. I had never taught before, but very quickly I saw that I was effective. My success with students was addictive because I loved seeing that aha moment on their faces. They would come to me in a fog of confusion, convinced that chemistry would be impossible to learn. But when I helped them understand the logic of the discipline, introduced them to a systemic way to approach the material, and expressed confidence in their intellectual abilities, they suddenly began to understand and instantly became motivated to spend time mastering the material themselves. I found, and still find, student transformation intoxicating, and I am convinced that every learner can personally experience it. In sum, because I found teaching so exciting, I decided to pursue a master's degree in chemical education and have never looked back. I'm happy to report that thanks to the learning strategies I acquired along the way, I never earned a grade lower than A in any of my chemistry or education courses for the rest of my graduate career. And today, I know exactly what I would say to myself in 1970 to earn all A's in my Cornell graduate chemistry courses. Good news. The good news is that anyone can undergo the same transformation that I did. I freely admit that I was clueless. If I changed, you can too. You can learn simple strategies that will boost your grades and make learning more fun than you ever thought it could be. Questions to ask yourself. 1. Can you relate to the author's experience? If so, how? If not, why? 2. Do you believe your current academic performance is related more to your ability or the amount of effort you are putting into your courses? 3. Do you believe you can undergo the same change as the author? 2. Why don't all students already know how to learn? What did most of your teachers in high school do the class period before the test? They gave us a review. What did they do during the review? They told us what questions were going to be on the test and gave us the answers. Consider some interesting statistics. The Higher Education Research Institute, HERI, published a study in 2017 that revealed that 56% of fall 2016 incoming freshmen reported spending fewer than 6 hours per week doing homework in 12th grade. But 92.5% of survey participants said that they graduated from high school with an A or B average. These statistics demonstrate that for many students, doing the focused, joyful work of deep learning has not been required for good grades. Presumably, because of their grades, these students are also extremely confident. 72.6% of them believe their academic ability is above average or in the highest 10% among people their age. So, many of you are not only accustomed to successfully breezing through school, but also unaware that horizons of learning and success exist beyond those you have already encountered. Figure 2.1. Figure 2.1. Why many students do not know how to learn. They did not need to learn in order to make A's and B's in high school. They believe they are in at least the top half of students their age, unaware that they can become smarter. Okay, so high school was easy. Why don't some students heed warnings about what they need to do in college? One struggling math major from rural Louisiana on a full scholarship at LSU explained, "People told me that college was going to require a lot more of my time and effort, but I didn't believe them because I had heard it before. They said that high school was going to be a lot more difficult than middle school, but it wasn't. And when I went to middle school, they had told me it was going to be much harder than elementary school, but I didn't find that at all." So this young man, along with the other 72.6% of students who judge themselves to be above average compared to their peers, very reasonably did not imagine that the typical warning signs about a college workload applied to him. Students are often told that they need to change their habits and do something different when they go to the next level of education, whether high school, college, graduate school, or professional school. But that's like saying, when you go to another planet next month, you've got to breathe differently. It's not your fault that you may not know what to do to be successful in a more challenging academic environment. Thankfully, there's a way to learn how to breathe differently, how to engage in deep, satisfying learning. Questions to ask yourself. 1. Discuss how easy or difficult you found homework, papers, quizzes, and exams at your previous level of education, e.g., middle school, high school, college, or beyond. Is the learning more difficult at your current level of education? If so, in what ways? 2. How is your current learning experience different, if at all, from your previous level of education, e.g., middle school, high school, undergrad? 3. Metacognition. What it is and how it can turbocharge your learning. I have tried the suggestions you gave, and it was like magic, seriously. Matt J., Jr., Department of Microbiology at Weber State University. Personal Communication, September 15, 2014. In this chapter, we investigate the overarching principle that enables students to stop failing their classes and start acing them, metacognition. We also get our first taste of how learning strategies can dramatically improve performance. First, we learn what metacognition is and how it helped two students increase their exam scores by at least 30 points. Second, I ask you to do a brief exercise that demonstrates the huge difference that learning strategies can make. Finally, we discuss why these strategies make such an impact and enable you to take charge of your own learning. A Tale of Two Students. Figure 3.1 shows the dramatic improvement of two students after learning about metacognition. Some faculty in my workshops have thought that these students are fictional, but I assure you, they are as real as you and I. Have I got your attention? Figure 3.1, A Tale of Two Students. Exam scores showing rapid and dramatic progress of two LSU students after they learned metacognitive strategies. Travis, third-year psychology student, 47, 52, 82, 86. Dana, first-year physics student, 80, 54, 91, 97, 90, final exam. Before we learn more about Travis and Dana, let's investigate what metacognition means. What is metacognition? Metacognition, a term coined by John H. Flavell, is thinking about your own thinking. It's like you have a big brain outside of your brain looking at what your brain is doing. Aspects of Flavell's definition of metacognition appear in Figure 3.2. Figure 3.2, metacognition, the ability to think about your own thinking, be consciously aware of yourself as a problem solver, monitor, plan, and control your mental processing. Accurately judge your level of learning. When you use metacognition, you become consciously aware of yourself as a problem solver, which enables you to actively seek solutions to any problems you may encounter, rather than relying on others to tell you what to do or to answer your questions. As you make the transition from being a passive student to being a proactive learner, you will gain the ability to monitor, plan, and control your mental processing. In other words, instead of staggering through a maze using instinct alone to look for cheese, you will become aware that you need to plot a course and search systematically for cheese, keeping track of what works and what doesn't. Metacognition also gives you the ability to accurately judge how deeply you have learned something, whether you have only a superficial understanding or the ability to widely apply your knowledge. For example, while studying, you might start to ask yourself, am I understanding this material or just memorizing it? When you use metacognition, you become tremendously empowered as a learner because you begin to be able to teach yourself. Metacognition, smetacognition. I just need to work harder. How do I know that you need metacognition, that you aren't already aware of yourself as a problem solver and are simply not working hard enough? I wonder whether the following scenario has ever happened to you. You excitedly turn in an exam, an essay, or a research paper, beaming with pride, knowing that you've done a great job. Then, when you get it back, it's covered with red ink with a big C at the top, or worse, a D or an F. When your work is returned to you with a much lower grade than expected, it's understandably difficult for you to process the cognitive dissonance. You believed you were smart and competent. Does this grade mean you are dumb and incapable? Of course it doesn't, but your doubts are already active. You begin withdrawing psychologically. You might sit back farther in the classroom or lecture hall. Worse, you might start missing class. Then, your performance on the next test is worse than your performance on the first. The downward spiral continues until you flunk the course or barely passed it. If this has ever happened to you, then clearly you are not able to accurately judge your own learning, and the discouragement of thwarted expectations prevented you from working harder. Moreover, even if in such situations you are able to rally and work harder, doing more of what you already know how to do is not likely to help. you need to learn a different way. When you learn about metacognition and implement metacognitive strategies, your performance will turn around. Let's see how well metacognition worked for Travis and Dana. Travis, psychology student. Travis was a junior I started working with only the night before his third introductory psychology exam. He had made scores of 47 and 52 on his first two exams, and we spoke for about 30 minutes via telephone because Travis's schedule didn't allow time for us to meet in person. Travis called me after his test was returned to say he had made an 82. I was quite surprised because I had thought he would score in the low to mid-70s. I kept my surprise to myself and said, "That's fantastic, Travis. Okay, if you make higher than a..." Racking my brain for a stretch score that would probably be just out of reach for him, then an 85 on the next test, "I will take you to lunch." Mind you, at that point in my journey with metacognition, I did not expect Travis to score higher than 85. In fact, I thought that his 82 was a fluke. These days, I know that when students use metacognition, the sky is the limit. Wouldn't you know, Travis called me back about 3 weeks later and said, "Dr. McGuire, I made an 86 on that test." I started looking forward to lunch because I wanted to find out exactly how Travis had done so well. During our meal, I asked Travis, "What are you doing to earn these fabulous grades?" And he replied, "I'm just doing that stuff you told me to do." We'll see in Chapter 5 exactly which metacognitive strategies made the difference for Travis. Dana, physics student. Dana was a freshman physics major who had come to LSU supported by a prestigious American Physical Society scholarship, but we met for the first time at a Change Your Major workshop. Dana was trying to get out of physics. Even though she'd wanted to be a medical physicist since the beginning of her junior year in high school, she'd become demoralized after making an 80 and a 54 on her first two general physics exams. In high school, she had been a straight-A student, so when she saw a 54 at the top of an exam paper, she thought, "Okay, I'm out of here." At the Change Your Major workshop, Dana introduced herself. "Hi, my name is Dana. I was a physics major, but I'm having trouble, so I need to find something else." The counselor replied, "Oh yeah, I understand. Physics is hard. We will find you something you can do." I raised an eyebrow and chuckled to myself. As Dana was leaving, I called her aside and asked, "Dana, do you have an hour to meet with me in my office?" She readily agreed, and I said to her, "Dana, I'm not going to try to talk you out of leaving physics, because if you really want to do something else, that's fine with me. But I want you to know that if you leave physics, it's not because you can't do physics. It's because you've chosen to do something else." So Dana came to my office, and we talked for about an hour. She made a 91 on the next test, a 97 on the one after, and a 90 on the final exam. She received an A in her general physics course and a 4.0 that semester. Even though her next semester involved illness and two hospital stays, Dana still earned a 3.2 GPA. She graduated in 2012 with a 3.8 GPA in physics, and in the summer of 2014, she graduated with a master's degree in medical physics from the world-renowned University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Metacognition can give students back their hopes and dreams. We'll discover in Chapter 5 which metacognitive strategies Dana used to make her grades soar. You can do it. I promise. Even if you have experienced abject failure, all is not lost. I often share with new students the dramatic successes of previous students like Travis and Dana, so that they can see what is possible. I say to them, "I don't care if you made a 2% on the first test. I know that you have the ability to make a 100% on the next test because your score on the first test is not any indication of how smart you are. It's a reflection of your behaviors the way you prepared for the first test. And I can teach you.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?